Hello, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's the 6th of June 2008, and boy, do we have a show for you tonight. Our lead story tonight, Kevin Rudd announces the formation of an Asian Union. Will we be part of some gigantic Orwellian superstate with shared currencies and no rights? A second main story of tonight, 9/11 Truth breaks through the Australian media blockade with an article and follow-up hit pieces from the ABC demonstrating that the general public is well on side with 9/11 Truth. We're also going to be looking at the food crisis and the link to genetically modified foods, and we'll round off with ABC teaching kids when they should die. I'm Hereward Fenton.
I'm Joshua Jackson.
I'm Max Ginger.
I'm Matilda Lawson.
And you're listening to Truth News on Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to the show. Tonight we'll lead with a story from The Australian, Kevin Rudd to drive Asian Union.
Huge story.
A huge story, and one which is going to have a lot of ramifications which haven't been fully spelled out yet. The story: Kevin Rudd wants to spearhead the creation of an Asia-Pacific Union, similar to the European Union, by 2020, and has appointed a veteran diplomat, Richard Woolcott, one of his mentors, as a special envoy to lobby regional leaders over the body. The Prime Minister said last night that the Union, adding India to the 21-member APEC grouping, would encompass a regional free trade agreement and provide a crucial venue for cooperation on issues such as terrorism and long-term energy and resource security.
Of course it would. Now, I've already read another article stating that soon after the free trade, what would follow would be an Asian currency. So nullifying the dollar, well, the dollar would just be rid, and we would have an Asian currency.
Indeed. I think that the real meaning of this news story and its agenda is one which we are not going to be privy to.
Well, look, let's think about something here. If you wanted something changed at a federal level, you're going to have to go to your local representative, and local representative goes to the national, to your state representatives, then state goes to federal then goes to the Asian Union, the Asian Union go to the UN. Like, it just, there's just never, you're not going to be able to get anything done because there'll be so much bureaucracy in the way and so much tyranny in the way that you just have no say.
Matilda, what is your take on this?
Well, I'm just wondering how, I mean, I hate to sound elitist, but I mean, let's face it, I have money in my wallet and food in my fridge. So compared to some of the other countries that we're thinking of joining up, we are part of the elitist society, I guess. What's going to happen to our standard of living? Does it drop because we're all going to...
Look, it's not just our standard of living that's going to drop. What you've got to understand is that we belong to a country which derives from a tradition of parliamentary democracy, of the enshrining of human rights that goes back to the Magna Carta. That's 1,000 years of history. 1,000 years of slow, painful forging of the basic concepts of what an open society is. Societies in Asia have not had that history. If we start forming a merger that merges an economic system
overnight,
well,
within 10 years,
the political implications of that are going to be enormous, right? And it's very, very different to Europe. Europe is a country made up of countries which are very similar. They all had the same background. They all had a very closely related economic and political system.
Massive trade.
We have such divergence between Australia and most Asian countries that the mere idea that these would be merged under one economic system is something that, I mean, for a start, it should be going to some sort of referendum. I mean, how could this possibly simply be announced from above?
Yeah, how could Kevin Rudd just come out and state willy-nilly, oh, we're going to have an Asian Union, we're going to turn Australia into a super state and get rid of Australian sovereignty and culture and everything that we've had for our measly 200 years.
And we should advise here that stories have already come out indicating that this would lead to a merger of currencies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's come out. It's in news.com.au.
How do they manage that kind of thing. I mean, that's what I'm trying. That's where it all fits in for me. I mean, how are you going to merge these cultures?
Well, Matilda, from our research, from the research that we've done, Josh and I and others in the 9/11 truth movement and the global kind of freedom movement generally, we have come to the conclusion that there are plans afoot to basically squeeze and squeeze the middle classes in all Western democracies to the point where the distinction between what is a first world country and what is a third world country is obliterated, and the population will be declining in our Western middle class societies as the populations of the third world continue to increase.
As currencies get deflated, which in turn drives up food prices, oil prices, living standards go down all around the world. And this is where the people of the middle class, which is the masses, need to stand up and say, oi, step off. You're not going to just create a big super state around us where we have no say.
But just on that, at the moment, our currency is seeing dizzy heights that it's never seen before, and yet for everyday commodities, we're paying more and more. And in fact, there's no end in sight, actually, to the rising cost of fuel and food. And yet we're experiencing so much wealth. And not only that, but they're projecting an enormous growth, especially in the mining industry, that is going to keep the dollar high for quite some time.
Yeah, I do agree with you. But if we really zoom out a bit economically, we see that Australian dollar hasn't actually moved massively. It's moved a little bit up. But what has happened is the American dollar, which is the reserve currency of the world, has dropped, making giving the illusion, depending on which way you spin it, that everything else has gone up.
Mm.
So by saying that the dollar is at new heights, it's not really. The American dollar is at new lows.
Yeah.
So our dollar just buys more. But at the same time, petrol prices and everything are going through the roof purely because the dollar's dropping. So it costs a lot more American, because all petrol is traded in American dollars. So all fuel prices go up because of the dollar dropping. Now, what this means is food prices go up. Not only that, and we'll talk about this later on when we cover the food crisis, but mass speculation on Wall Street causing food crisis.
You are listening to Truth News Radio Australia, a radio show exploring globalist tyranny, mass media deception, and the New World Order from an Australian perspective. Now broadcasting weekly on all frequencies and throughout the blogosphere. Find us at www.truthnews.com.au. I think the really important thing to keep in the front of your mind here is the question of sovereignty and questions of what the structure of our society is, because this is something that is potentially, it's much easier to unwind it than it is to bring it back. In other words, this is well established in the history of fascist societies generally. Once you start dismantling freedoms, it becomes much easier to dismantle and continue dismantling than it does to actually build them back up again. It takes enormous pain and enormous time to build the kind of values that we have built into our society. Once you start talking about merging our society with countries which have no tradition of this, or very, very short tradition of this, for example, Indonesia only became an independent country less than 50 years ago. Now, these time frames show you that, actually, maybe slightly more, maybe between 50 and 60 years ago. But what you know, these time frames are very, very different. We belong to a very long chain of tradition, which was basically inspired by ancient Greece, and you know, further perfected in various periods in history. But in many ways, what we experience, what we have taken for granted, is an experiment and an anomaly on the global stage. Most people live under tyranny. That is pretty much the norm and the standard. We have been an experiment. And what I see happening, what many people are suggesting, is that those who pull the strings and those who have the power want to actually end that experiment. They basically want to take us all back to the way people live in most of the rest of the world.
Well, if you just see the control grids building up around the world, the control grids of identification and tracking. These are all based on the same trajectory of control by a higher level, and that the sum of all of us is much greater and much more important than the individual.
Well, we have surveillance, we have tracking, we have, you know, invasions of privacy, the intention to basically use biometrics more and more. But these are all signs. These in themselves don't prove anything. They're merely indicators of a trend.
Absolutely. I mean, what did the Jews think when the Nazis started giving all Jews armbands that they had to wear? That they had to wear the Star of David on their arm.
It's an interesting comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a trend. You know, there's nothing there. There's no fascism there.
And I think possibly people might have humoured themselves to believe there wasn't anything to be afraid of in that either.
No. Oh,
at the time.
Well, what they would have said is, well, we all wear skull caps.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We all go around saying that we're Jewish. What's the difference with having a star? Yeah. And that's the same thing that they say here. Oh, we all have driver's license. So what's the difference with having a national ID card? Yeah, but anyway, we're diverting from the topic, which is the Asian Union. But it generally shows that when you have small government means control from the people. Big government means tyranny, means easier corruption from the top, means just hell on earth. And people better research that to really understand that. Research history.
The bigger the power structure, the more potential there is for corruption. I mean, any time you have a large bureaucracy, the potential for corruption increases. I mean, we're proportionally to the size of the bureaucracy. The kind of bureaucracies that will manage these super states will have to be enormous, and they will have to have enormous reach and enormous power.
Oh, my God! Local council struggles as it is, let alone, some huge conglomerate that is like a ladder to... You know, well, I was going to say a ladder to heaven, but a ladder to hell of trying to get anything done. Mind you, I guess they won't want you to be doing anything anyway because it'll all just be one general rule.
It'll be a one-way street from the top down. Mm. There won't be a way back up. And that's the issue, you know. The experiment was give the people a say.
And what I find slightly incredible about this is the way this has been introduced without any kind of without any preamble, without any context. And this is typical of what we have come to learn to know as the New World Order, is these top-down decisions.
Yeah,
that
Reuters will just feed a stream of news that the PM announces we're now going to get Westcock to push an Asian Union and try to get the idea going. Doesn't even ask the people. So instead, the Prime Minister gets someone to ask the Chinese and the Asian region whether they want it. Then he doesn't even ask us if we want it.
Yeah.
I mean, if people don't think that is absolutely absurd, and if people don't even get angry about that, then Aussies need to...
Josh, you see, part of the experiment was to dumb the people down so they wouldn't fight.
Oh, look,
so you're
absolutely.
You're sort of defying the odds of the entire experiment up to this point to expect people to stand up because they've been trained to sit the fuck down and shut the fuck up. So do you know what I'm saying?
Indeed.
Oh, absolutely. It's all part of that.
This reminds me a little of a famous quote, I think was from Donald Rumsfeld, where he says that... you know, we basically make decisions and you follow along, and by the time you've figured out what we're doing, we'll have made another decision and you'll have to figure out what we're up to. It's an off-quoted quote and no one quite knows what the heck he was talking about, but it sounded very sinister. Basically, you know, they're implying that they will set the agenda for the world and we will follow along and figure out what it is they're doing eventually, maybe.
But how does the Prime Minister have the right to subsume the entire Australian culture into something that's this important? I really don't understand.
Well, it's interesting because we never had anything like that from John Howard. We in the whole.
Oh, it was coming, and then Howard was like the mise en place to the main course. I mean, he was the prep.
He certainly was a prep in a number of ways in terms of subjecting us to kind of customizing us to a police state.
Absolutely.
I mean, he did a lot, and I fucking hate John Howard. I hate him, but he did a lot to dumb this fucking society down, to disarm us literally and relatively emotionally and spiritually, if you like, as far as belonging to a country. I mean, he changed the direction of this country. He changed the way people felt about this country and about each other. He delivered Rudd the fucking slave, the slave sort of generation that that Rudd needs in order to follow this agenda through. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I absolutely agree, and it's some very, very important to say that. But the thing about Howard is he was holding back on the carbon trading, and he's holding back on things like the unions, the Asian Union. Now, the thing is, the only reason I think he was holding back on the carbon trading schemes was because the New World Order, in terms of the power elite, was squabbling about how it's set up, because the Americans were squabbling as well. That we don't want, you know.
Well, the way I see it, Josh, is that within this phony left-right paradigm, what you have is one side will play one tune, another side will play the other tune. Now, when one side does their thing of like, oh, we, you know, well, we don't necessarily believe in global warming. The other says, oh, you know, you're terrible. You don't believe in global warming. And we tend to think that the debate is real and genuine, whereas, in fact, both sides are co-opted. Both sides are scripted. So when you have John Howard, who wasn't particularly strong on the global warming, that may lead you to think, oh, that he genuinely had some beliefs in that area. Not necessarily true at all. He doesn't even need to have any. He merely is a mouthpiece for one side of an equation, and then the other side of the equation comes along, and you put it all together, and what you get is the full picture of what we have. So you really have to look at both sides in the two-party system as essentially working together. They always work together.
They're a tag team.
Now we now have prominent liberals talking about criticizing government plans for centralized databases and the ID system. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 6th of June, and I'm Harrowood Fenton, and I'm here tonight with Matilda, Josh, and Max. And we're discussing Kevin Rudd and the Asian Union.
And if anyone doesn't believe us, just look through the last 50 years of Australia. What happens is that people get upset. America everywhere, most Western countries, in most democracies, people get upset about some way that the country's going. So they vote someone new in. The new person comes in and keeps on going with the same agenda, with a slight shift in language, with a slight shift in the way they approach the agenda. But at the end of the day, 5 years later, when you look back at what their legacy is, it's usually, holy moly, that's the exact same agenda that was being pushed, if not stronger, than the person before that the people were so angry about.
Well, it's time to move on to our second topic for tonight, which is the recent publication of an article titled Unanswered 9/11 Questions on the ABC opinion site Unleashed. I was approached to write the article myself, and I did so, and the article generated a tidal wave of comment and controversy, and it was an extremely interesting little roller coaster ride that we all went on, watching the comments go up and up and up, and then finally seeing the ABC close discussion under claims that the topic had become the subject of a campaign. Very, no, no, mustn't have campaigns. No, it's totally against the whole principle of anything to do with news or opinion. Must never have a campaign, yes. Well, anyway, that was the pretext under which discussion was closed. The article focused on the collapse of the World Trade Center and Building 7. It documented a lot of evidence. It had a lot of links to videos. And I attempted to present a concise body of evidence, under 1,000 words, summarizing some of the many, many hundreds of unanswered questions of 9/11. So I'll just turn the discussion over first to Matilda. Tell us your feedback.
Well, Hera, what I think, firstly, kudos to you and congratulations for having the opportunity to get that kind of word out there. I think it for a while showed that the ABC were willing to look past their own doorstep for some stories of real substance, but obviously comments were shut down, which was no great surprise, but still a disappointment. I think it's better to have these things out than in, and, you know, one small step for mankind. What? I don't know. But, you know.
Yeah, I think it was a very, very important step for 9/11 Truth in Australia, because the mainstream media, this is, honestly, when you talk of the media, you think of a body that is in between the people and the government. And the body is there to constantly question and constantly keep the government under thumb and be skeptical of everything. That is what they are. And they're there to be controversial.
Right.
Now,
right now, all they do is toe a party line. Mm-hmm. And it's not only a party line, it's a line from global RSS and global news feeds. So Reuters, international organization, will be at the press gallery. And more often than not, the mainstream media will pull stories from Reuters instead of actually collecting the stories in their own backyard. So what I'm saying is that the mainstream media has basically rendered themselves redundant. And we are now, we the people have to become the media. And that's what's happening with groups like We Are Change, groups like 9/11 Truth Australia, truthaction.org.au, 911truth.com, 911oz.com, and truthnews.com.au.
Can I just say, Josh, and also for those listening who maybe are a little bit uncomprehending of what it is we're going on about, the subject of the truth or otherwise of what we've come to be told as, you know, the events of 9/11 is one which it's extremely important. It is vitally important for the current state of the world and for the way we're going forwards. What actually, you know, the facts are behind those events, which we don't know. I mean, we're not claiming to be privy to secret information.
No,
we only know what's publicly available. Isn't that right, Josh?
Well, here at Truth News, we try not to theorize because we don't want to be labeled a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
We want to look at evidence and bring that open and expose it.
And when we see a building coming down at a rate of free fall, which is a massive...
Three buildings.
Absolutely massive building. Yeah, well, three buildings, but let's just start with one, you know. Let's just talk about Building 7 because we don't need to talk about the other two because we've got one building. One
building 7, WTC 7, folks.
We can talk about one building, Building 7, and we can observe the video. We can see it coming down. We can see the rate at which it's coming down. And we can use high school physics.
Really, really base physics, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. To work out that that is actually coming down at a rate of free fall, and that in order for that to occur, there has to be in real time, there actually has to be a snapping of all the structural supports symmetrically on every floor of that building as it comes down, And even as that's occurring, we see the entire concrete of the building being pulverized.
If you have structure underneath something, it needs to be taken away for something to fall in free fall. If it was to get crushed, which is near impossible anyhow, but if it was to follow the official story, it would happen very, very slowly and in bits, and it would happen...
it would be slow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've seen plenty of earthquake imagery.
Something I was interested in was something about the story and how it ended up being cut. You know, the commentary was stopped.
Well, yeah, Max, you've only just read the story tonight, and I mean, we'll get back to that in a minute. But I'd like to actually just get your immediate feedback. I'd just like to fill out the story a little bit because we've had the original story, which was written by myself, and then there were two follow-up stories which the ABC published. Which were both taking the line against what I had written, and that they were both extremely hostile to what I'd written. One was more directly, the other one was more indirect by using sort of the guise of intellectually kind of sort of almost psychoanalyzing.
Look, just to quickly interject there, I have no problem with people questioning 9/11 truth. I think it's important, but if they're going to, please go and research it first, because we've rebutted so many arguments that come up first, come up all the time. And this guy literally brought up the oldest, dodgiest arguments, which have been scientifically disproven.
Well, he cited the Popular Mechanics article, which is now 2 years old. It's incredibly out of date, and... but yes. Anyway, just getting back to Max. So, what was your off the top of your head? How did you find the article to read it, and how did you find the rebuttal articles to read?
Well, I mean, I found the article very fair and insightful article. I learned a lot just reading that, and I was actually quite surprised by the rebuttal. I was sort of reading through, and in actual fact, I didn't understand exactly what he was actually talking about.
Yeah, there was a kind of a disconnect, wasn't there? I felt the same thing when I first read it. I thought, wow, you know, this person is not really even sort of engaging the topic.
It didn't pick up on anything that you said. He just sort of...
It's almost like it's like for the sake of having an alternative, an opposing point of view, they had to bring this guy out. And he was providing a role, but he was doing it in an extremely unconvincing manner. I think the ABC must have really been struggling to find someone to write the article, because he really was a very poor choice.
Well, your article had plenty of links. Everything was referenced. Every comment you made, every criticism of the official story was linked to scientific papers, to white papers, to video footage, to evidence. To films, to documentaries, to everything. This person had nothing. He made general sweeping statements which were so old, pointed to some magazine article. I mean, Popular Mechanics, at the end of the day, it's a magazine. And for them to say, look, magazines debunked all this. Look, if there was a mass murder that happened down the road and some magazine wrote a story about who did it, would that be the end of it? Would we not need an investigation?
Yeah, that's right. But as I was saying, I'm just interested in why the actual comments were shut down by the ABC.
Sure. Look, well, you'll see by reading the article, you can see the final comment here the final comment from the moderator. Although the final comment is somewhat confusing, because it is actually a post by a contributor to the site who has been extremely hostile to us, who goes by the name of IA. And the quote is from the moderator, but it's inside a comment by this.
Yeah, that is dodgy, chap. Isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it conveys the impression that the moderator and this chap are actually colluding, or even one and the same. I mean, it's rather confusing. What do you think about that, Matilda?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously they're working together. I don't know if they're one of the same, but and you know, without doubt. IA is serves as the purpose, basically shut the conversation down, and it was always going to be like that. I mean, who gets asked to write an article and in doing so is then declared to be on some kind of campaign? You can't have your cake and eat it too.
Well, considering that it was well known before they even commissioned the article that this was the subject of a campaign globally.
Oh, look, Unleashed have had articles about gay marriage. What, is that not a campaign? Of course it's a campaign. They didn't shut down their comments and they got 600 or something comments.
That's right. So why aren't they on a fucking campaign and why are we all of a sudden on a campaign?
And what I can tell you is that the follow-up articles to this have had a deluge of comments, 99% of which are in favour of the article that I wrote.
Really?
I can bring those up.
Yeah, the good thing was that out of the 590 or so comments on Harewood's article, at least 95% were absolutely positive. And these were general ABC readers. Of course, there were people from the movement that were posting as well.
Mm.
But generally, it was people just saying, wow, thanks for opening my eyes. This is amazing stuff. Thanks, ABC, for posting this. And because people are eventually, they sort of feel like, hey, thanks, media, for being a bit critical of an administration that has lied to us left, right and centre openly and transparently about WMDs, about reasons for going to war, about everything. Yeah. And so people really had a very positive comments.
Now, the second article and the third article have continued to receive comments, but what I've noticed is that the moderators are only letting a tiny number through. They'll let like one or two a day now. They're basically deliberately choking it back.
So let's just, what are the headlines of the two articles?
The two follow-up articles? The second one was Conspiracy Theory Lunacy.
Great. And what kind of headline is that? When we have extremely important questions, very, very serious.
I mean, we also have serious people behind these theories, if you like. I mean, there is, you know, hundreds of people, professionals, who have voiced their concern and opinion for the official line, you know, against the official line.
Absolutely. We have professional firefighters. We've got professional physicists, career professors, architects, engineers. All these people all saying, hey, hang on, the physics doesn't add up. There's traces of thermite. All this evidence. And then we get a follow-up article by the ABC saying conspiracy theory lunacy. Mm. I mean, that to me is just so disgusting and despicable that they shouldn't even get someone that's truly versed.
That's right. To
write a rebuttal. I mean, I think that it's very important to constantly be criticizing the movement, the official story. Everything has got to be looked at very carefully. I mean, that is scientific. That's what scientific means, to be critical. And for them just to say, you know, it's like saying that CSI has found some evidence of someone else that did this mass murder, but CSI are just conspiracy theorists. And they're lunatics.
That's right.
Because they've found some forensic evidence.
And that's exactly right. And that's what they fail to readily, with their use of language, to readily include, is the fact that a conspiracy theory is no longer a conspiracy once you have evidence. And the evidence is there for 9/11. So we are conspiracy.
But the evidence is there that completely contradicts the official fable that was told, but the evidence is not there to prove exactly who did it, why, and what their agenda was. And this is what continually is thrust back at you when you try to question 9/11.
So they are about to release a peer-reviewed paper that goes into what was used, which is the nanothermite and the thermite.
So sorry, could you repeat that? I think I might have been talking over you. Can you just repeat that last statement?
They're about to release a peer-reviewed paper that looks into the use of the nano that talks about how nanothermites and thermites were used to bring down the towers.
This is the research from Stephen Jones, of course. Yes, I mean there's been a lot of research there that may be productive. None of it's conclusive at this point.
It's not just research anymore, though. Now it's peer, the all important peer reviewed. I know.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, Matilda, I don't necessarily put all my cards on any one particular line of research. I think they're all interesting.
But it gives a massive point of credence.
But my point on it is that I don't want to be allied to one theory, because if that theory then proves to be false, then it only provides further ammunition for those who. Well, they're all theories. Everything is a theory. Gravity is a theory. You see, but basically that's the way science works. Science only has theories. It has hypotheses. Yeah, but all science works on the basis of theories. And as a theory is tested by experiment and by replication, it as a hypothesis becomes more confirmed by experience. It starts to move towards a theory. But in regards to 9/11, we don't need, in order to establish the case for a reinvestigation and to basically disprove the official story, we don't need to prove it was thermite. All we need to do to prove that is to show that a building cannot fall at the rate that it fell.
Oh, look, but all of it. The mountains of evidence. Even if one thing sticks, it's enough. And we, as a movement,
there are
thousands.
I mean, we're only talking here about the actual buildings, and the that part of it is one part of the whole jigsaw puzzle, and it's one of the most significant in your face aspects of it. But there are. I mean, you can completely ignore the buildings, and you can look at how the 9/11 Commission didn't do their job properly. And this was the whole focus of the film 9/11 Press for Truth. They didn't even touch the issue of how the buildings collapsed. And
Press for Truth, folks, is a film written by the Jersey Girls, which are family members of the people that died, got together and say, hey, why have you guys just said, hey, it was this guy in a cave called Osama bin Laden and gone to war? Where's the official investigation? We want an investigation. And these, what is it, five or seven girls or something?
The Jersey Girls were originally four women.
Four women. And, very brave. Aaron Jonkowicz, what's her name?
Brockovich
style women. Very strong, very, very determined women who said, we need an investigation. And that's where the 911 Commission report came from, which basically ignored 75% of their questions. And so they're still wanting a proper investigation.
Yeah, the commission ignored their questions. The commission was overseen by heavily controlled Republican Party people. Zelikov and Condoleezza Rice had a very close connection with each other. The commissioners who were on the commission, apart from Zelikov and Keane, who was the chairman of the commission, none of them were allowed to see the classified evidence. They basically were not even allowed to look at the evidence that they were meant to form opinions on. I mean, that has got to tell you something.
Absolutely.
The opposition to the formation of the commission was quite strong. It was curtailed very quickly.
Well, one guy had to resign because he was so close to the Bush administration. Now, getting back to your article, Harold, the third rebuttal from the ABC was talking about conspiracy theorists in general.
Yes, the second rebuttal article takes a philosophical twist on this. And there's one comment here which I may not be able to find it, but it was an excellent, I think, deconstruction of the style of this particular article. And if I could find it,
Max,
here, I'd read it to you.
What do you think of the language used when somebody says that, you're questioning 9/11? Oh, conspiracy theorist, are you? What do you think of that sort of that language and that use of the word the concept of a conspiracy theorist?
Well, I mean, coming into it the way that I have, I'm looking at the word conspiracy theory, is it's pretty much like Harold said about science, that it's a theory and not something that you can confirm or put your finger on. And so that allows it to be a very sort of open approach, which actually is a problem. And that's why I think that labeling it that way is actually a way of keeping us from getting across the truth.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a very, very valid point. And I think that when we talk about theory, we don't need, I mean, for example, if I find you on the floor with a hole in your head, you know, profusely bleeding, right, and there's a gun on the floor, right, I can theorize that someone shot you in the head, right, with the gun. And that's still a theory. But we don't really need to take it to a level of, we may need some forensic evidence there, but when we've got the evidence of the gun and you with the hole in your head, and that's generally enough to go to court with, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
And so we don't really need to theorize about the trajectory of the bullet, you know, what the bullet did when it hit your skull, you know, the degree to which it actually shattered your forehead, and whether that actually caused your death.
And that's certainly what the lawyers will do when they take it to court. So they will use that.
Well, in some cases they'll try, but they'd have a hell of a time with that, because if you've been shot in the head with a bullet...
I'm making the point, they love to bog you down.
Yeah, but if you've been shot in the head with a bullet, generally they won't try and argue that the bullet didn't kill them. Mm. That one is generally not tried on in court, agreed? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're shot in the head with a bullet, they'll generally agree the bullet killed you.
But see, this is the thing, right? If there was two bullet holes in the head, and the official story was he killed himself, and then we come in and say, well, there's evidence that there's two holes there, he couldn't have killed himself, then to be labeled a conspiracy theorist because there's other evidence contrary to the official's line, because a person can't shoot himself twice in the head, right? So if there's two holes there, all of a sudden...
Two bullet holes in the head and it's a suicide, yeah.
I come in and say, hang on, no, that couldn't be a suicide. Conspiracy theorist. You know, and everyone goes, yeah, aliens. Man, you must believe in aliens. You're a tinfoil hat wearing. And this is what has been systematically done to create a terminology to totally ridicule anyone that actually looks at evidence and questions party lines or official doctrine.
I mean, this was done in the case of the inquest into the death of Princess Diana, the inquest came 10 years after the event, okay? And the only reason they have an inquest is when new evidence is brought up. So the father of Dodi Fayed was a major player in this. But,
conspiracy theorist.
But this phrase was used over and over again in relation to him. And in relation to him specifically, but the fact is there was an inquest. Now, why do they have an inquest? There must have been substantive a priori evidence, otherwise they wouldn't have had an inquest. There are strict rules that guide this. But don't misunderstand me. I'm making a point here to explain why we've got an issue with this term conspiracy theory, because we had a prima facie case that there was something more than what the government had said. There was plenty of evidence, but when it was reported in the media, all we ever heard over and over again was that the father of Dodi Fayed was a conspiracy theorist, and somehow this crazy conspiracy theorist had got into the courtroom and had managed to co-opt the entire government into running. How could that even happen?
Well, it's a joke. The fact that is, the people just label you a conspiracy theorist because you see evidence of something contrary to...
Official line.
Mm. Anyway, so that's where my anger is over the ABC rebuttal to you was basically writing conspiracy theorists off as just nutcases. Mm. You know, I mean, he's in the article, to be fair, he said, you know, conspiracy theorists, big label, you know, Orwellian style label, are good for society. These whack jobs are good for society because, you know, we need them. We need people questioning the government. Well, hang on. Isn't that what media's for? You know, isn't that what everyone should be doing? Or is it up to some whack job with a tinfoil hat? You know,
sure.
This is the ridiculous point that we've got to, where everyone stays asleep, watches their football, watches their fluff on television, gets really upset about what's happening on Big Brother on Channel 10, instead of actually questioning the government because they might be called conspiracy theorists.
But, you know, I think what we're doing now, Josh, and with this show, and what we intend to continue doing is to change the mindset so that we do not any longer allow these memes to take hold of our brain that have been projected through the mass media to basically paralyze our reasoning capacity. Mm. And I think we've been working really hard at undoing all the programming that's been put into us. And we are now magnifying that. And basically whoever we come into contact with is going to be reprogrammed or deprogrammed by listening to us.
Well, not only listening
I
to us.
I hope not but, reprogrammed, I hope deprogrammed.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And we always ask people to not just believe us. Go and research. And I say this every show, but I think it's such an important thing to say because I don't want to be just another piece of propaganda that is telling you what to think.
Of which there is so much about, isn't there? There are ideologues out there who use every event and every conspiracy to their own ends to basically promote their agenda or their political game or whatever it is that they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, we aren't. We're basically in the process of trying to free up the society to get people back to the status of the free democracy that I believe that I grew up in.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, time for a song. Oh.
What you believe you grew up in, Harrowood, and what you actually grew up in are two different things.
That's a very, very, very acute observation.
You may be living in an illusion of what you grew up in, because I know I sure as shit am.
Exactly.
What was presented to us, I mean, when you're in the Matrix or when you have your eyes closed, as we all know, as we can all profess to, the world is a very different colour.
Well, yeah. I think we should talk a little about this Matrix metaphor because I think it's one that's not immediately obvious to a lot of people. And perhaps after the break, we'll take this up a little bit more before we move on to our next topic.
Absolutely. Let's cut to a song.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point, they, who have covertly created the problem and blame someone else, who glean that reaction of do something, then offer the solution to the problems they have created.
If you tell the people they have an external enemy, they'll follow you anywhere.
The government may actually have been behind September 11th and the September 11th attacks and the conspiracy theories in general surrounding 9/11.
Problem reaction solution. Problem reaction solution. Problem reaction solution. Problem reaction solution.
The New World Order better stop carrying out terror attacks. We've caught them over 200 times in the last 100 years, Western governments doing this. Hitler did it, the Russians did it, the British do it. Look at America, it's turning into a police state.
Problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. And it works like this. And it works like this.
With regard to 7-7, there's been a witness report in which somebody who was on one of the tube trains says that he didn't see a man with a rucksack. In fact, after the explosion, what he saw was metal pointing upwards from the bottom of the carriage. That would indicate, of course, that the bomb was not carried onto the tube train, but was in fact attached underneath it. Underneath it.
Problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. Solution.
Saddam Hussein has got weapons of mass destruction and he's
his weapons of mass destruction program is active, detailed, and growing.
There's no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
No doubt at all that we will find evidence of weapons of mass destruction.
This is Truth News, Radio Australia. You can find us on the internet at www.truthnews.com.au. Welcome back to the show.
And I don't actually know who to credit that to. It was a hit we found on YouTube, and we stripped the audio and played it right here on Truth News, Radio Australia.
One of those little known gems of the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the next topic we're quickly going to cover because we are running over time, but it's an extremely, extremely important subject, and I think everyone should look into this as well. I mean, look, we're drowning in a sea of things we need to talk about, but one thing we need to talk about now is the world food crisis. And the link to GM food, and every time you hear the food crisis conversation, you hear the same word. Well, you hear two things. You hear we need to stop with ethanol using food for fuel. You know, everyone's going on about the food for fuel, when really, honestly, we're not even using 5% of the world's fuel as ethanol. We're not using any. It's such a small amount of food that is going towards fuel. Now, I'm not saying it's a good thing to use food for fuel, and most of the crops they're using aren't actually food crops, but the crop space is being used for ethanol instead of food. Okay, fair enough. But the big thing is here, it has got nothing to do with ethanol, and it has got nothing to do with GM. GM will not save the food crisis. The fact of the matter is, the food shortage is speculation in commodity futures following the collapse of the financial derivatives market. And these are all big men working in Wall Street, desperate for quick returns. And these are dealers taking trillions of dollars out of equities and mortgage bonds and plunging them into food and raw materials.
Josh, you've reminded me of a story that was published in the Sydney Morning Herald yesterday. And we might try and Google for it in a minute, but the title of the story was something like Tyrants Accuse Western Powers of Manufacturing the Food Crisis. And the article was a quite derisive one because it was articulating the views expressed by the leader of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, and the leader of Iran, Ahmadinejad, who have been the only two of the global stage who are questioning the validity or the, you know, the accuracy
and just
of the food crisis.
And look at that, right? I mean, these people are awful people in their own right. They're absolute tyrants. And they're telling us the actual truth about this. I mean, the fact of the matter is, even on Wall Street, they're calling it a commodity super cycle. That's what they call it on Wall Street. And it's right. Likely, they're saying that it's likely to cause starvation on an epic scale, simply because they're speculating on food and commodities, on base staples. Now, what's happening, though, is that you're getting big pharmaceutical companies, like big farmers like Monsanto, utilizing this whole epidemic and using Wall Street's collapse, using the credit crunch, because this, you know, this food crisis has come in the last, you know, 8 months. And, 18 months. Now, the reason why it's happened in 18 months, because that's the same time this credit crisis has happened. The food crisis is absolutely linked to the credit crunch and the lack of liquidity, which is getting passed into the food and raw materials. They are speculating like mad, which is driving the prices of food artificially so through the roof that then these GM companies sit there to have the gall to put, because these, you know, Monsanto is a New World Order group if there ever was one. They are right at the top of the pyramid. They feed the news down, and their news is we have the genetic, our genetically modified crops, and they'll openly state we genetically modify the staples. The staple diets, like
ladies
corn
and gentlemen,
and rice.
We have reason to believe that this food crisis has been engineered, that it was deliberately enacted, and that this is part of an agenda which we are trying to bring forth.
This is such an important agenda because food is the only thing. There's like three things you need to live. It's air, food, and water. And they're already controlling the water by polluting it with fluoride and other chemical toxins. But to now take control of our food by artificially inflating the prices on Wall Street and then having the gall to say that our answer is GM corn, GM rice. You know, I saw a show the other day on the ABC stating that the reason why people are dying in third world countries is because rice doesn't have enough vitamin A in it. Now, that is not the reason why people are dying. The reason why people are dying is because they refuse.
They're not getting enough food.
They refuse to give them the right sort of economical stance because the lack of money, the lack of chance, because these big world banks, IMO, international monetary funds, have been squeezing the credit out of those people, have been killing those people by manipulating their financial systems, their commodity markets, infiltrating their feudalistic systems with guns and weaponry to keep them fighting amongst each other.
The whole situation has been co-opted. We have the International Monetary Fund was set up in the post-war period, and this organization went into many of post-colonial countries, which were basically only very brand new nationalist countries that had recently separated from colonial powers, and the IMF went in there offering them money, offering them huge loans to engage in massive projects.
Now, you've got to remember, folks, this isn't gold or silver. This isn't real money. This is digits on a computer that they're offering them. This is simply things from the ether, paper.
But by issuing these loans, what happened was the Western, oligarchs were able to maintain their control over this, over many countries in the world, which were no longer officially, colonies. But it was another form of colonization through debt.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of this thing, that's how you stop mass rioting in the streets, through saying, oh, we want our sovereignty back, we want our sovereignty. Okay, have it back. Meanwhile, we'll keep all our banking infrastructures in your country and keep you on the absolute brink of starvation, if not starving. And then to have the gall to say, we'll protect you by introducing GM food. Now, the divisive subject that everyone will bring up is GM food's bad for you. GM food's good for you. No, GM food's bad for you. That is not the argument.
Again, it's a false dichotomy.
It's a false dichotomy, folks. Of course, some GM food might be good for you. Of course. But the real problem here is
patenting food,
folks. The fact that one multinational giant can own apples outright, seedless apples, seedless banana, seedless everything, is so despicable and frightening that you people out there got to prick your ears up right now and really go and research this. Understand the threat that your family is under by Monsanto, the same people who have given absolute poisons, who have killed millions of people through medical vaccines and all sorts of things that have gone wrong. And people, honestly, just look up, man, the history of Monsanto. You'll see how despicable this company is. You're trusting them with the staples like rice, like corn.
If I could just say, I think that the issue we come up against again and again is that we have a background within our own country, and many people, who we meet on a daily basis, potentially many of our listeners, may be of the mindset that I have been for a large part of my life, which is basically sitting back and thinking that because we live in a democracy, everything's okay, and forgetting the adage that was well known to the founding fathers of the American Constitution, that unless the government is constantly afraid of the people, unless the government is constantly on guard against basically the people should be keeping the government in a state of anxiety.
Well, in a state, in a controlled state, in a pen.
No, but my point is that the people should be keeping the government in a state of anxiety.
Absolutely.
Rather than the other way around.
Oh, absolutely.
What I'm pointing out, and this was part of the principles of the US Constitution, is that it was always foreseen that the people would have the power, that the government was always to be held in check. But what's actually happened is, because it's become accepted that the government, sort of, we have this benign view. We believe the government is benign, and so we give the government more and more control, and we sit back and we think, oh, we are just merely citizens. We don't have any responsibility or rights or duties to basically steer the country in the correct direction. We let the government make all the decisions. And we think that that's okay because we've grown up in a time of prosperity in a post-war epoch, you know, from World War II through till the late 1990s when we were very lucky and we benefited, whereas we've now moved to the end of that phase.
You talk to any old-timer, you know, if you've actually got the gall to talk to them, because a lot of people don't. They just go, oh, crazy old folk, crazy. You know, we've been indoctrinated by television to call old people crazy, to stick them in homes, because they actually remember what tyranny is like. They actually remember history. The young people, they don't know anything but total gluttony. The old folks, they know bondage by government. They understand what it's like. Now, it's really important that we see this food crisis of what it is, and it's absolutely linked to the financial collapse of the world economic system. And don't get this confused and have a knee-jerk reaction to allow GM products on everybody's table. Max, how do you feel?
Well, very simple. I think it's something that as a culture we should understand, and that is quite simple, that we are condoning murder. And millions of people have died, and we can talk about it in various ways. We can refer to Germany and the amount of people that died there, but people must realize that companies like this and this behavior is leading to more people have died like this. There is blood on the hands of these corporations and the CEOs and the directors, and it's just appalling.
How do you respond to the proposition that we need to inspire a sense of civic responsibility once again? Because the people need to understand that unless they take some actions, unless they use their opportunity to take civil disobedience, you know, to do sit-ins, actions, demonstrations, and strikes, and all the things that people have done in the past. Unless they enact those rights now, pretty soon it could be too late, and they won't even be able to.
Because
once you cede, you know, a certain amount of power, it becomes virtually impossible to ever regain it again. This is the new phase we've reached now, I think, and because so much power has been ceded from the people, the government is just becoming more and more completely unabashed. You know, it's the government is just basically
They're free to do whatever they want. But only because we're allowing them, folks.
Yeah,
and this is why it's important not to feel down and that we're saying negative things. No, we're saying positive things that open your eyes, get involved, get politically active, and don't allow them to, because we at the end of the day hold the cards, because we are the people, we are way outnumbering them. And get the info out there peacefully and lovingly. And the last story we're going to cover here tonight is the ABC. I mean, we're really, really going hard on the ABC today. And I don't mean, you know, we're not attacking one network. Yeah. It's all of the mainstream media, really. But
we're giving as good as we get.
Yeah. The ABC has been exposed for having a computer game on its website of being find out when you're going to die. Aimed at age 7.
Actually, kids. 9.
Age 9. Yeah. So this game is aimed at kids age of 9.
Well, and there's an irony there, because if you follow the default options in the game, so the title of the game is...
Let's just cover what the game
is. Yeah,
let's
cover what the game is.
Right, the game is basically to find out how much you're using, how much energy and your car and water and all that, and what you're using, and then find out what age you should be dead at so the earth can live longer.
Yeah, the way they phrase it is, how much of a greenhouse pig are you?
Yeah, and it's got these little pigs, and you become fatter and uglier the more stuff you use.
Until you explode
and blood splats everywhere. This is aged at little kids, mind you.
And if you follow the default options in the game, in other words, if you are an average person and you consume an average amount of fuel and you do an average amount of consumption, you will be told that you will die at age 9.3.
So, now, Max, you put your general statistics into the game. What happened?
Oh, I died at age 1.5. So I've been alive way too long.
Way too long. You should have to die at age 1.5.
Yeah, I should be dead, folks.
1.5 years old, you know.
But, well, folks, I mean, why, for starters, are we being told that we should die? I mean, surely the most important thing is the sanctity of life. I mean, that's we would take that as a basic given, that we don't want to be killing people or children, I would have thought.
The whole concept is that we are amazingly creative beings. We are infinitely creative. We have got so much potential, it's unbelievable. What is stopping us is massive elite oligarchs forcing us to use disgusting means of energy and not allowing us to abuse our potential into creating clean energies, clean ways of living, renewable ways of living, which is all fantastic stuff, and we need to be more renewable. But to go around telling our children through fear that they should have been dead 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's just absolutely disgusting. I'm sure that someone thinks that was a sense of humor game or something.
But,
you know?
there is a theme running through the environmental movement, and it comes up over and over again, where the human race has become the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
The human race is something to be destroyed, to be eliminated, and it just seems to fit in rather nicely with agendas that have been, you know, Rockefeller and
the elite.
Various people have espoused
ideas. You read their
writings.
If you read their writings, they all espouse ideas of killing 85% of the population.
There's been talk of it, yeah.
You know, and I'm a greenie. I've been a greenie all my life. I love nature. I love walking nature. I love going and bushwalking and everything. I recycle my Glad wrap, you know.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I used to go nuts. But the real issue here is that we have become the enemy. And that's when in reality we are the saviors. Because we can become better people if we're allowed to, without the systems of patenting, of systems such as that, where they control old systems which make a few elite groups extremely rich and powerful while keeping control of everyone else, never allowing us to get past oil. While even though we have huge oil spills and this and that, never letting us get past into new technologies that are free and abundant and clean. And instead of touting new technologies and new concepts of free and creative societies, they'll destroy us and call us pigs and teach our little children that they're pigs and that they should die.
Look, the reality is, Josh, I think that oligarchies do not do particularly well in highly populated situations. The increase in global population, which has been proposed to us as some terrible thing we should be afraid of, is actually something that the elites should be afraid of. Because with an increase in population, there are so many more potentials for people to help each other and to share the kind of the creative and the constructive opportunities that just come from having more people on the planet, that it's much harder to actually keep a population in subjection. And there's actually been studies of this, and it's actually backed up by some research to suggest that to maintain a feudal society, you need to have a fairly small population. It just doesn't work under larger populations. And that's why it's very interesting that these oligarchs who we know of in the media, such as the Prince Philip and I think Ted Turner and a few of them have made these comments about reducing the world's population. It suits the ends of those who wish to be rulers.
Absolutely. And It's very important to understand even that the fact is that Western worlds aren't actually growing in population, and we're actually declining in population anyway. People are having less babies. You know, the average kids, it's 1.8 kids per couple in Australia. I mean, that's, you need to have at least two kids per couple to be breaking even, you know, to keep a steady flow. I'm not saying that China and India aren't, because they are actually going up.
Indeed. And look, the fear of population was actually instilled in us long ago. It began in the 1970s with the Club of Rome report, in which they basically set the groundwork for looking at humanity as being the enemy, humanity as being the problem. And since then, you know, that theory has continually come up again and again. The threat of population, the population bomb, there was a famous book of that title from the 70s. And it was seen as a terrible threat. You know, the human population was going to destroy the planet. Whereas in fact, my gut feeling about it, as well as I know the research that many people have done, is that population is not to be feared. It is not some terrible scourge that we have to culled.
What is to be feared is corruption and control, control of thought, because we are infinitely amazing and infinitely creative human beings that can solve the problems that we're seeing through. I know people that are so ingenious in terms of their ingenuity that they can create houses where they are totally self-sufficient and work beautifully with the environment. And there is no reason why that can't be expanded into full. But instead, we have these neo-feudal systems where everything is shipped here and there. We don't even grow our own food. We expect everything on a plate. We're over consume in terms of getting stuff from overseas, and we've got to have Evian from
France. And we all live
France
in a form of debt slavery.
We live in debt slavery.
I mean, this is the neo-feudalism, I think. Is it, you know, whereas in the ancient feudalism system, the peasants were servants to the king, and they basically worked the land that was owned by the king.
Yeah, now we're servants to the Visa card.
Yeah, and the bank. Yeah, and most people regard having a major mortgage as an achievement. You know, it's regarded as a sign that you actually are going somewhere in your career once you've got a giant mortgage. Whereas I've always seen it as being a little bit like, you know, putting a giant chain around your neck.
Well, it does. I mean, I ask people, my friends who have got mortgages, to come out and do some, political actions. Oh, I can't. I'm too busy. I've got to pay. I can't possibly do anything that would risk my job, because then I would, you know, I would lose the mortgage. I'd lose the house. I'd lose everything.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's how they feel. And this is truly the chain around people. Now, but getting back to the whole concept of mass population culling, and this is, like you said earlier, Harold, it's rife within the green community of this, oh, we're overpopulated, we should start dying. I'm having my knob snipped so to make sure I don't have any more kids.
Yeah.
Jeez, man, like, great, you know, we need good people on this planet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just we need beautiful minds that will come up with great concepts.
And well, we have a shrinking population in this country.
Oh, I know.
And I mean, much as I dislike the previous government, at least there was some effort there to, you know, encourage people to procreate. But what I feel is, and we were discussing this before in the previous segment about the left-right paradigm, and how left takes it one step and right takes it the next step. Left takes it the next step and right takes it the next step. Now, they both appear to be opposing each other, whereas in fact they're both working together. Now, liberal was pro-babies, okay?
Yeah, but in what sense? Hang on, can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
In what sense? Pro-babies, giving a $4,000 grant to anyone having a kid is basically giving the absolute lower class the excuse to have more children. And that's all it is to say, here you go, have more children. And there is statistical proof that the pokies went up in profits as soon as that exploded, as soon as that came on the market, the baby bonus. So
yeah.
Is a rich family really going to care about $4,000? No, it's nothing to even think about. They don't even think about it. I can tell you, not even rich, just normal middle class people with two good jobs aren't going to think about the $4,000. They really don't give a shit. And this is the thing that I really felt like that was basically to create more of an army. It was almost like these poor people that can hardly afford education.
More fodder, yes.
More fodder, can hardly afford education. Yeah. They'll have more kids. The $4,000 will disappear in a blink of an eye, and there'll be some more uneducated people that we can go collect to have an army and have some more peace, in quotes, keepers. You know, so I think in one way they did want population, but for a really strange, messed up reason. I really think there was something strange behind that. But I mean,
it all seems to, in the end, lead to the same agenda.
I mean, how did you feel, Max, when there was this baby bonus? You know, you're not extremely wealthy, but you're not extremely poor either. Did you think about it much? Or?
No, not at all. I mean, didn't have a baby for a baby bonus.
Yeah, exactly. You know, most people have babies because they want to have rear a lovely child in the image of the parents.
And people will have children if they feel that their life, you know, allows it, you know, but people will hold back from having kids if they feel terribly threatened, like they do now. I mean, people feel financially completely unable to have children now. This is the situation.
Not only that, there is so much fear pumped into us from every single angle that you feel scared to bring a child into this world. I mean, Bob Dylan said it right. You know, and he was talking about the military-industrial complex, saying, you know, you've thrown the worst fear, that you've thrown the worst thing that could ever be hurled, the fear to bring children into the world.
Yeah.
And it was just rang so true to me. Anyway.
Extremely true.
So think about that. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, folks.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, we've discussed this greenhouse theory here, but we haven't actually discussed our views about the greenhouse global warming theory, and indeed we don't really even need to, because we're not here always to just debate whether or not such and such a thing is proven. We're actually looking at a social phenomena, and we're looking at outrageous sort of acts such as the publishing of that game on the ABC site, and I think regardless
of the... If anyone wants to go have a look at the game, sorry, Herod, wants to have a look at the game, just have a look at the show notes, like always, at truthnews.com.au/... well, you can go to the front page there and see a link to the podcast.
But yes, I mean, I think regardless of the truth or otherwise of the greenhouse CO2 theory, anything that promotes such attitudes towards human life and giving children the idea that they're going to, you know, have to be killed, it completely discredits the global warming movement and the global warming theory. The fact that these types of highly politicized, highly aggressive, hostile things are allowed to be produced.
Well, it unmasks these people for what they are, and very some of them are very sick. Sociopaths that honestly don't care about life.
We have to believe that.
And with that, folks, we'll leave you to it. Please, we cherish your comments and absolutely need more of it. What's the Skype name now?
We do have a phone-in number. Now, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get that up.
I think it's Truth News Radio.
Yes, it's Truth News Radio, and you can Skype that. But we also have a phone-in number, which you can call from any landline. We just need to get that up in the Skype window, and we'll be able to see our own number, Truth News Radio Australia, here. And our number is, oh dear, I don't have it.
Well, it'll be there on the show notes.
But it will be there on the show notes.
So check the show notes, and please ring us, leave a message on the Skype answering machine. We love all your feedback, negative and positive, but usually more positive than negative, please. And till next week, may the truth set you free.
Good night.
Good night.